Welcome to the Anite podcast After Hours, and this time it's a special one, as it is UI in April. But we're recording not April, but it will be up in April, so yeah, I'm lying to you. Hopefully, maybe, who knows? So, today we have several fans of UI in April. If you haven't noticed from Anite, we have a lot of fans from UI in April. So today we have John.
Hello.
We have, you know, the biggest guy with UI in April, Matt.
Hello. K is love. Remember that.
We have Storm Warning.
Hi, guys.
And we have Sean.
Hey.
So, now that that's done, I guess I'm just going to ask, what are your general impressions of the show now that it's over? Why don't we start with Matt?
Okay, well, you know, it's probably not a mystery to everyone who's been following Anite for the past few months that I absolutely love this show. I'm going to go out on a limb and just say that this is my favorite show of all time. You know, it's just so fantastic, just the way it wrapped up perfectly, and I love the combination of the music, you know, the characters, and the tears, you know, lots and lots of tears. So I hope that if you're listening to this, you've watched the ending, because we're going to be spoiling all of it. So just fair warning right there. And yeah, you know, ever since I saw this series, I read the first chapter way back in, I think, May of last year, and I knew that this was going to be kind of a special show, but the way they nailed this adaptation of the show has just been really impressive to me. But I won't get too much into that yet. I'll pass it on, let's say, to John.
All right, yes, I ended up loving this show. I started off a little lukewarm to it, and that's probably because, you know, I had just gone through my summer of shoujo, and I wasn't ready to do this again. but you know, and I kind of, in my heart, it was always Kimi ni Todoke is like the queen of all shoujos. And this, it's actually not a shoujo, but it had very much the same feel. But by the time it was over, I had completely just, I love this anime. I'm going to buy it even if it's, you know, Aniplex prices.
You poor souls.
And it will be.
Yeah. I need it in Blu-ray. I need it.
Okay, so I guess I'll put in my two cents, which is probably different than most people here. I really loved it, and it is absolutely my favorite show of the season. But I wouldn't go to say it's my favorite, and it just barely edges out on my top 10. It's like 11. It's really good, but I like White Album 2 too much. And I just can't compare those. But it's really good, and yeah. I also actually prefer the beginning of the show in comparison to the later half, but that's just because I am me and I feel more connected to that bit. But we'll talk about that later. So who wants to go next?
I'll jump in, I guess. It's number 4. Okay, to take a slightly different spin on it from everyone else, my absolute favorite part about Your Lie in April was the musicality of it. Which is expected because we're talking about me here. But I really enjoyed everything from the soundtrack and the openings and endings to the actual classical pieces they played and the emotional connections they made through music. And that was what really, for me at least, made this show great. So it's definitely on my top 3. I really don't have a number 1 show of all time because that's impossible for my mind to settle on, but it's in the top 3.
All right, so I'll put in my final word here to close out this this roundup. So, through the entire journey, it was all well. Everything was pretty good. I was pretty set in stone, thinking it was one of the better shows of the season. But I never really thought it was gonna jump out at me and be one of the best, like, ever. And then the last episode hit. That last episode, I can say for myself, it was the best episode of anime that I've ever seen. I don't know if you guys agree, but
I don't.
I have no objection to that.
Episode 13.
The presentation was absolutely pristine. There was nothing wrong with it. I couldn't think outside of of the show, my mind was just lost inside of it.
It was
I couldn't escape. It was just when it was over, I just stood up. I had to take a walk outside and just clean up my face.
I watch anime on my way home. I wait for the bus. So it finished right when the bus got there. And I was like, oh, this is a sobbing mess. It was like, I had like, oh crap.
No, like, I found the final episode just to be wonderful, but I think one of the really special things that connected me with the show is just how much sort of I saw, at least, not necessarily myself, but at least in terms of wish fulfillment and stuff like that. Like, this is exactly, you know, the type of romance that I wished when I was 14 that I had been in and stuff like that. So it just felt like, you know, it really speaks to kind of your inner high school student in a way, but it may come as a bit of a surprise, but I didn't cry for the final episode.
You monster.
Shocking truth.
I know. Well, I'm the biggest fan there is of this show, but to be honest, I'm not too big a crier and stuff like that, but I was pretty shaken up because it really affected me. The only thing I've gotten, you know, on the edge of crying for was Anohana, the ending to that, because, you know, that's also a really special show. But for this, you know, it really just stayed within me. But after every episode, I was continually wondering what was going to happen next. And that's why I didn't read the manga ahead or anything like that, because I really wanted to see it in its anime form first. So, I mean, this is going to make a really lasting impression in my mind, and we'll see if anything else can top that afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. Really, that's a really important point there. The music, the anime has the music, and it integrates it so well. So I guess that's a good segue over to, well, the music. What are you guys' thoughts?
Glorious.
I was always a big classical fan, so yeah, it's an amazing show for introducing people to the joy of piano.
I don't give a crap about classical music, but the way Shigatsu just present, that is my reason. Whatever I just said was why it's so good.
Yeah, really.
Well, and it's...
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say, and it's not even just, like, the classical music is awesome. And I even recognize some of the pieces because one of my neighbors used to play the piano when I was a little kid, and I would walk by their house, and I would hear these exact same songs sometimes. But it wasn't just the classical music. It was also the soundtrack itself. Like, I'm not sure how many of you have, like, listened all the way through it. I know Matt has.
Hey.
But... It's amazing. It's really good. It's probably going to be the best soundtrack this year, and we'll see where it places overall in my mind after the dust settles. But it's just very good. It's got a whole mixture of different instruments and themes, and they use it really well in the show too.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, like I definitely agree with your point about the soundtrack. I feel like every episode had, you know, these dramatic moments because obviously it's no secret this is a very dramatic show. It tries to be, you know, amping up the dramaticism of everything, you know, 100%. And right from, you know, the second episode, I remember very powerfully the soundtrack in the scene where he's walking, you know, he's walking home and he's contemplating because he's just seen Kairi play. And the soundtrack that came on right there, it's called Your Spring, actually. It's track number 15 on the soundtrack, if anyone is
jeez,
able to look
you got that down.
But,
memorizing the whole
track. I've been listening to it a lot, what can I say? And, you know, the music that was playing just accompanied the moment so well, and then when he finally looks up and sees her there, kind of the main melody of that particular piece of music hits, and it's just so good, and they continue that throughout the entire series, so I just can't say enough about the way that they directed that particular part. So, you know, definitely check out the soundtrack if you liked any of the tracks from the series, because there are a lot of great tracks.
Yeah, and it adds so much to it. Like, I really feel like the anime is definitely the definitive form of this story. Because, for example, you take the scene from, I think it was episode 12, where the two of them are in that field with the fireflies. And then Kaori, she's like, "What, you know, what's your reason for playing?" And, you know, who's your reason? And there's kind of that pause, And then the music really kicks in. And that's, by the way, it's track 25 from the first disc.
You got it.
Yep, yep. I said damn during that moment. That was a hot moment. I was, yeah.
But if you didn't, if that soundtrack was not in there at that scene, it would not have, like, it would have been great, but it would have not been nearly as emotionally impactful, at least for me, as it was in the anime. Which is why the soundtrack is, it's so important, and they did it really well.
No, I agree. I just wanted to say on that point there, you know, there's the original version which they put in, which is by an artist named Ina, and there's also an alternate version by Risa Tanada, who's the voice actress of Kaori. So if you look on the internet, you can find a version of Kaori singing that specific song. It's very good, and I think that was episode 11 where they were doing that. So it, definitely go check it out. It's a great bit of music, and it's not on any of the single releases, so you'll probably have to search around a little bit for it.
It really just does send shivers down your spine, doesn't it? There's so many scenes. Impactful.
Mm-hmm.
And the soundtrack doesn't even necessarily have to be the super... Like, it has those fun and silly songs, too. Like, like track 20 in disc 1, Banzo, 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 Banzo. It's literally... It's got this marimba part that just keeps playing, and then, like, little, like, flute solos come in randomly. And it's... I love that song for what it was... But it didn't even necessarily have to be super emotionally impactful. It was there, and it was very pleasant sounding, and it worked really well with the show. So, the soundtrack is good at its emotional points, and it's good everywhere else too.
Yes, it is.
Which is not something that most soundtracks can do.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, the usage really is very important. I gripe about it all the time, and this one is just one of the great examples of used amazingly and very pleasing to the ears. So yeah. Very enjoyable. Very enjoyable.
Yes, indeed.
So,
yeah, as a manga reader, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Just as a manga reader, the anime is the definitive version. I read the manga first, and the anime has much more impact with that sound. I just wanted to say that before we moved on past music.
Okay.
No, I agree. I just wanted to get in, just before we move on. I feel like the way that the classical music pieces were used particularly well in this, because from reading the manga, like John was saying, you see a performance and things. And the Arakawa, he's very good at using the symbolism things, but it was just incorporated so well into the anime adaptation. I know that my particular favorite piece was probably Winter Wind, where Emmy is playing that. I believe it's in episode 9 where she's playing that song. And you see kind of the fall leaves kind of swirling around her while she's playing the song. And it's just such a good personification of what she's kind of trying to portray through the music. And it's so important that they did that in a show that is all about the music. So they did such a great job there. And, you know, I'm like Stan, you know, I did not have any interest in classical music before, but, you know, I went out and I bought the classical soundtrack that comes with this because I wanted to listen to more Chopin and that sort of thing. So I can't say enough about that.
Oh, without a doubt. I'd buy anything. Like, classical music isn't of my interest, but the classical music of this show, just for the memories, if anything.
Just, yeah, and also...
It's all good, fellas. It's all good.
Well, the way that they used the performance piece in the final piece that they played, the Chopin Ballet... OP1 and G minor number 23, which was the final performance in the last episode. It actually does actually last 9 minutes long in the if you listen to a concert pianist playing that particular piece, and they used the entire duration of it. They didn't cut it down at all in the final episode. So it's amazing how they were able to interlace the story throughout the dramatic beats of that song, which I feel like just made the scene so much more powerful, and it's just amazing the way they did that, because in the manga they didn't have to worry about that, but in the anime adaption, it just gets raised to another level because of that addition there.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say, outside of the final performance, the other one that I really enjoyed was it was the piece that they played. I'm trying to remember. I think it was the first time when he was Kaori's accompanist. It was Introduction and Rondo Capriccio. I really enjoyed that one, and I still play that occasionally because, and that was one of the songs from like that I've heard multiple times throughout my life. So seeing it like in anime and how well like they put it in and put emotions to it was very interesting for me to say the least. So,
And they incorporated that well because if you listen to My Truth, they incorporate that as kind of a back as a leitmotif for all her different pieces. So you can hear that piece kind of playing through music that accompanies her. So I felt like that was a really good use of mixing the original soundtrack with the orchestral soundtrack. So they did a good job there.
Yeah, just all the better if you already know everything about classical music. Get to see it in such a presentation.
One thing that I actually really liked was not any particular piece because I don't know classical music at all. I enjoy it, but I don't know it. But I do like how whenever Kosei was screwing up the watering down effect, that was really good. I really liked how they did that.
Yeah, that was nice.
And I guess we should just continue on with the next segment. It's something that the manga really doesn't etch out. And I'm just going to get on you. Manga, not manga. Please, it's bothering me. But
manga?
But the use of
color. Sorry, that's my Chicago nasal A.
Q manga.
Yeah, but the use of color, the thematic use of color in the show, how it gets more vibrant when a character reaches their peak and it dulls down. It's really striking. Thoughts?
Yeah, there's a lot of thematical use of color. Of course, Kosei, as he meets Kaori, he says that his life almost bursts into color. Before he met her, he was just seeing gray, really. And that's one thing to point on. I don't know if you guys noticed, but the last time Kosei and Kaori were talking to each other, they were on the roof of the hospital, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That scene, it was the saturation of there the color was saturated out. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but the whole aspect with the snow and such. Of course, snow is white, and white is not color, so. The colors really died down. I don't know if that was a foreshadow to anything.
It was
no, I think he definitely did that intentionally, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean, it was everything from, like you said, when he first said that she brought color into his life, and then you look out and the entire, like, the show, it's suddenly so vibrant and colorful. Or when she's sick in her hair, even though it's usually, like, a very bright blonde, it's become kind of dull and almost gray. It's
really
like they
is.
Use color, yeah, they use color all the time, even if it's like a really like minor change, it's there. And that's one of the really nice things about the anime is the attention to detail of the studio. It's been very good.
Yeah, I just hope that A1 Pictures hasn't been working their employees to death. Yeah, it just really shows you the juxtaposition that the show really likes. It likes to contrast things, and the color is just a prime example of how they do this. So, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And also, just the way that they were able to incorporate kind of the color into the storyline, where you hear characters commenting on color. So it really, there's a lot of synergy, I feel like, between the art design and the animation versus kind of working that into the story, where you, as you were saying before, you see very visibly that as Kaori gets sick, you know, her complexion is much more cold. But you see in the end, when you get the flashbacks of her, you see that she's back and she's colorful. And in kind of a way that Kosei remembers her for bringing that color into his life. And I thought a really powerful scene in particular was when, you know, you see her in rehab. I believe this was in episode, you know, 18 or 19. When you see her in the rehab and she's kind of working to try and get back to walking again. And Kosei and her parents are standing there, and, you know, the dad is thanking him for bringing the color back into her life. And you can see, sort of in the scene after that, you see that the scene becomes much more colorful because the way that they use the hospital is kind of a place devoid of color where it's a lot of grays. But you see that for once in that hospital, they bring a little bit of color into it. So it really emphasizes the main points that they were trying to make, and that was it was really helpful, I think, in terms of emphasizing that.
Yeah. Yeah, on that matter, synergy. You mentioned that, but really that is the prime thing that April does so well. Everything is in sync. Everything helps each other. It's impressive how coordinated it is. It's so connected. Everything just helps each other out, and it really makes for a very impactful, powerful experience.
Yeah, it almost feels like the entire anime was made by one person instead of like a large staff that they have at A1.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone really had their heads wrapped around the whole project on the same page.
Yeah. Now, whether or not they were, like, literally locked into their chairs for 24 hours a day, that's up for debate, especially considering the studio was also doing Saikano at the same time.
And and they're doing Magic Kaito, too.
I think they were doing Nanatsu no Taizai as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Don't all of those shows look great.
They're all pretty much amazing.
Well, I haven't seen Magic Kaito, but...
It doesn't look bad. I mean, it's not amazing, but it's very good, so... Yeah.
I'm sure that they definitely placed priority on Your Lie in April and Saikano
definitely.
Over the other two.
Yeah,
definitely. I
don't know about that.
Seven Deadly Sins looks great.
Yeah, it's animated really fast-paced, and there's detail in every shot. It's relatable to Fate Stay Night, Unlimited Blade Force, if anything. Just visually.
Yeah, they did a really good job, and they were able to pick kind of their moments where you see that they kind of go to not as detailed models in the humor scenes, but they really know how to up the ante when they really needed to, and we definitely saw that in the final episode during that last performance, which was absolutely, you know, breathtaking in terms of visuals.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just, I agree with you all, you know, it's a really strong directorial effort, because the director for this, Kyohei Ishiguro, this is his first thing that he's actually kind of been the director for, I believe. And just you wouldn't know from... He's worked on... I'm just looking this up. So he's worked on Psycho Pass, and he's worked on Kokoro Connect and that sort of thing as episode directors. But this is his first time actually heading up a series. And, you know, I'm really impressed with just the direction that he was able to bring to it. And he fundamentally kind of understands what makes the series tick, and that's why we were able to get such a good adaptation out of it.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to anything he makes in the future. Anybody that can make this kind of show has a bright future, and they're really going places.
Let's raise the expectations for this guy.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit at a disadvantage because I'm red, or I'm blue-green colorblind, so I've kind of I set this conversation out, but I did notice the relative saturation. It's just very deliberate, consistent, I guess, very artistic, I guess, the presentation of the show increases the impact of everything, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking
of impact, these segues are amazing, right?
They're built in.
They're built in.
I wish we could have the synergy that the show has.
Yeah. Let's talk about the lie. And if this is up on the first, which it probably won't, we're all lying to you. None of this is real. What is this? If not, well, we're still going to lie to you. Let's talk about the why.
Okay, so I guess just as an introduction, if for some reason you've forgotten in the last week, you're a monster who's forgotten the last week what the lie is. Basically, the entire romantic arc of the series is that, you know, Kosei's been liking Kaori, and he's been thinking that she's in love with his friend Watari. But in her kind of dying letter, Kaori's told him that because, you know, she realized that she only had a limited amount of time to live, she said, I decided to tell a single lie, and that lie was to that she liked Watari because she wanted to meet Kosei because she had been admiring him for all these years. So that was the ultimate sort of lie in April that Kosei found out. So what's everyone's thoughts on that?
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was so... Honestly, I wasn't exactly sure if they would have a literal lie in April or not. Almost, because we had been getting to it, and then even if they did, I would have as much, it makes so much sense when I think about it. And you go back and you're like, oh, you can make those connections because it's there within the show before. But choosing that and the way that they presented it too, like in the letter and at the last, it's like there's almost like a pause and then suddenly, oh my gosh. And I just thought that was the perfect way to do it.
Mm-hmm. It was really enlightening.
Yeah, like it makes the series different on a second viewing, and I've kind of started watching them through again, and you pick up on a few little different things. Obviously, you know, in episode 2 where she's saying, you know, oh, I was waiting for Watari, you know that's not actually the case. She was waiting for Kosei. And in episode 9, you can or episode 8 or 9, when they're doing a flashback to Emmy as a child, because she had also, you know, had cried during Kosei's performance. And if you actually look at the moment where she starts crying, you can see Kaori and her mother both sitting there looking at her. So it's those types of things that they were very clever in working that into the storyline. But it's so beautiful, kind of the way it all played out. Now, I'm not sure how much that is kind of just wish fulfillment on my part, but I feel like it was just it changes the way that you see the series, and it's almost sad, you know, that she had to die before he found out about this, but it's just really beautiful in that way, and I really liked it.
That's really where her motives lied, though. Like, if she had gone into it and been like, oh, hey, I'm Kaori, I like you, I've liked you ever since I saw your performance in the flashback in episode 9, and that's just not how she took it. She knew she was gonna be gone, so she kept it under the radar, and really, I feel like she meant to just be around him and absorb as much of his presence as she could through the rest of her life. And then once it was finally done, then she made it clear to Kosei.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Yeah.
Also, I'd like to mention that I think her whole personality during this whole stint was a lie too. I mean, everyone's just saying that particular lie, but she was a quiet person, and this was her attempt to be someone different. This was not her, but eventually turned into her. So it was kind of a lie when you think about it. So yeah.
But that's just the amazing point of it. Mm-hmm.
That's just how powerful
to get something done. Is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this might be like rampant fan speculation here, but I kind of, and she mentioned that she knew she had limited time, and I feel like she didn't tell Kosei because I think she was worried that her death would cause him to have similar issues from when his mother died. And if she had actually, you know, had told him that she loved him when she was alive, then her death would have been all the more devastating. But for him, I think it was almost sort of a closure to find out after she died. Like, she died, he's sad, then he gets the letter, and he reads it, and he's like, oh, this, I mean, it's sad that she's gone, but her feelings are there in the letter.
And he's happy.
And he has that letter, yeah.
And he's happy because he's like, oh, she liked me too, after all this time.
Exactly.
And the viewer felt the same way. So
yeah, the viewer experiences exactly what you just said. This entire time, we're all sad because she's gone, and like that's the end of it. But unexpectedly, just with that letter, everything becomes so happy and just unbelievably positively emotion.
Yeah, like I definitely think, you know, the moment that got me most in this entire series, at least for me, was the I love you part in the letter. Like, you know, when the tears dropping down from Kosei and she told him that she loves him, that was so good because, you know, I feel like in a lot of series, we don't get that type of overt romantic sort of resolution. So that just got me so hard because that was what I was hoping for. And it was really satisfying to just see his feelings affirmed in that way. And that made the scene so much more powerful because you've had that 22 episodes of waiting and wondering, and then you finally get it all at once. So that was great.
Did he get to say it to her?
No, he didn't.
She knew. She definitely knew. She could tell.
Well, because he was saying, you know, I was playing, you know, he was playing for her and that sort of thing. But I don't think he got to really say it out there. He did say, you know, oh, I want to see you and things. But that's kind of Kosei's personality, is he took a long time to stop kind of denying himself that he was in love with this girl. And when he finally figured it out, it was already near the end, so they just never got that particular moment. But I think I think it was pretty obvious to her that she knew, yeah.
There's also the part that he didn't need to say it out loud. His music told it.
Yeah, yep.
Very true.
And yeah, that's actually something that I was just about to mention. I think one of, now, the when she said that she loved him, that was definitely the most powerful moment for me. But the second most powerful moment, I think when they were doing their final performance, and, you know, she appears next to him playing the violin in his mind, and he, as the piece starts to end and she starts to fade away, he's ready to let her go. Because I think he struggled, you know, like when he saw her in the hospital having that, like, seizure, that completely broke him for a period of time. And when he's finally he's playing with her, and he's finally reached this resolution, and through music, he's finally able to accept it. And that, for me, that was extremely powerful.
Do you think he knew she died before he started playing, or while he was playing?
I think that he knew that she died. Well, I think he knew that she was going to die. Like, he was not going to see her again before he started playing. I think that he felt that she was dead by the time he was done playing. I mean, that's just my opinion, though. They don't actually, like, tell you for certain in the show.
Yeah, I think that at least the way that I took it, was there was a scene, I think, during the performance where he's saying, "Let's beat this illness. Let's beat this illness." But at least my perception was that he thought that she was still alive at that point. And he, you know, it wasn't a conclusion that she was necessarily going to die. But definitely, when you reach sort of that second half of the song, and she basically dies on screen, and I'm sure that we'll be able to talk about just how powerful that was as a death scene. But I think that, you know, by the end, at that moment, he had realized it, and then it all comes to fruition at the end of the song when he has kind of accepted that.
Yeah. That's a recurrent thing in Japanese stories too. While people who are about to die appear to their loved ones as, like, living ghosts, and then they die, and then the ghost disappears.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not making that up. That's a real thing.
No, so, I know. In a couple of short stories I've had to read for my Japanese culture class, I'm trying to think which one of them are. It's not coming to mind, but that's definitely something. You're 100% right. That's something that's a motive there. So, yeah.
I had hope even through the entire song, even after watching her disappear on stage like that. I still had hope, and it wasn't until the very, well, I guess next, like, 5 seconds where they're standing in the graveyard, Kosei and Kaori's parents. And that's when it became 100% solid, 100% set in stone that was the case.
Yeah, I was definitely hoping. The entire song, I was like, wait, is she dying? Oh, Jesus Christ, she's dying. Like, and I was like, no. And then I kind of knew. It was funny, I kind of realized at the same time that Kosei died, I'm just like, she's dead, isn't she? But I didn't really want to accept it. But then they hit you so hard when they just cut to the graveyard. You know, and I touched a little bit upon this in the Anate review, which you can check out on anate.kinjo.com, that, you know, they didn't spend a lot of time on the actual aftermath of the death, where you don't see, you know, what your typical scene of all of them in the graveyard and everyone sobbing and stuff like that. You just cut to him in the graveyard receiving the letter from the parents. And that was really powerful because, you know, we've seen in almost a more intimate sort of way her dying through the way that was portrayed during the music. So I feel like they did that with such a good amount of sort of nuance, where I was really impressed with the take, where they didn't overdo it, but they really drove home the emotional point there.
Yeah, the show wasn't about her dying. It was about the characters overcoming the fact that she did die and their growth because of it.
Yeah, and it's almost like one of those, like going off what you just said, like one of those, like a cheesy line, like, it wasn't about her death, it was about her life.
Absolutely, that's the best way to put it.
There was one kind of false note at the end. I don't know if anybody was bothered by it. They made like a BL joke at the end.
I laughed. It was nice to break it up, I think.
No, I need to keep on crying. I don't need to be laughing.
Laugh through the tears, John.
I can't do it. I'm sorry, Proton, I cut you off.
Oh, no, it's fine. I was I was just about to like lead into the next thing, so that was perfect. I was just gonna say, we were talking about references shortly. There was the scene about 3/4 of the way through the show. I don't know the exact episode where Kaori mentioned a quote of the book talking about the double suicide. Matt, do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. So there's a book that factors very prominently into the story. It's called Ichigo Dome, and that translates roughly to the Alliance of the 15. So it's a very similar sort of story. It concerns a guy who, they're the same age as the protagonist in this story, and he's a piano player, and he has a friend, and he goes and visits this friend's, I guess, friend in the hospital, and she's terminally ill, she's sick. I don't think she's suffering from the same thing as Kaori, but she is also sort of sick, so he befriends her, and they eventually fall in love, and she asks him if they want to commit double suicide. In that way, they don't, and what happens is, he ends up playing Ravel's Pivane for a Dead Princess for her, and she has surgery, and she dies in the end. But it's clear that kind of Your Lie in April, it takes a lot of notes from the story, and just the way that they reference it, where, Kosei, after he's asked by Kaori whether they want to commit double suicide, he's running through the street and he has Pivane for a Dead Princess playing through his mind because they've referenced that particular story. So I felt that was really interesting, the way that they decided to deal with, kind of a really mature sort of topic like double suicide. And I feel like even though at the time it seemed like it was a joke and it was kind of played off as a joke, knowing what we know about Kaori's character, that may have been a very sort of real manifestation of, her state of mind while she was that sick. So it really hammered home that point. So what did everyone else think of that?
Based off what you just told me, because I didn't have any knowledge of that book, it kind of sounded like she was telling him that she for sure was going to die at that moment. If he was familiar with that story, assuming everybody knew the story.
Yeah, and also, I feel like when it factors into, when we're talking about the lie and the fact that she loved him the entire time, it may have been a very real sort of question asking him to kind of affirm his love for her in that way, because there's a long history in sort of classical Japanese literature of Shinji, which is love or suicide, and it's viewed as kind of a very romantic thing. So I thought it was very interesting that they brought that in, and it's kind of a little bit of a cultural disconnect for probably viewers not in Japan, just because it's suicide's typically portrayed in a different sort of way. But I felt like it had a really interesting sort of thematic meaning in the course of the story. So I just wanted to comment on that a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely a touchy subject over in the Americas. If you take it for its surface value, of course, that's. It's something that's terrible, right? It's something that normally people, even if it's a made up story, people wouldn't touch on. But it's a bold step. But if it serves a different purpose than just to say, oh yeah, let's do this, let's kill ourselves, then it's very artistic.
It kind of gives a window into what the underlying feelings were there, which is very interesting. But yeah, anyone else have anything they want to say about that before we move on?
I'll just say something really quickly, because I do know that there is the disconnect in the Americas from that, but I still think that as much as our culture kind of like looks more down on suicide, I still think that there is an element of romance that almost any Western viewer would be able to see, and which I saw it. I appreciated it for what it was.
Yeah, it's so. Romeo and Juliet. I mean, that's
yeah,
yeah. There's a lot of cultural differences, especially with the ages of the characters, that really don't necessarily translate to kind of American or Western, sensibilities. Because you can't even talk about suicide and middle school kids here.
Oh,
at
yeah,
all.
No.
That show is shut down. So
yeah.
But that's not the selling point of the series, so that's why it's still being able to be produced in this or distributed in America.
Yeah, and they also deal with it very, they didn't they didn't really spend a lot of time on it, so they didn't necessarily glorify it or anything like that. But they did, you know, deal with something that when they're looking into that sort of the mindset that she was in there, they're dealing something with something that's not talked about a lot. So I thought that was it was a very sort of mature sort of take on that. And I liked that they didn't emphasize it. They didn't need to go in too much to it, but they explored it a little bit, and I felt like that was very interesting thematically.
Yeah,
I know that they didn't spend
I
too
felt
much
that
time
it
on it,
was
but they
kind
put it at the
of. Go ahead.
they threw it in at the end of the episode. It's not really like a cliffhanger or anything, but I sat on that for an entire week, and I like almost got thrown into depression. Like every night, I just go home and be like, "Oh man, I can't do this. The next episode, they can't. They no, this isn't how it's." No.
Like, I get it. It's a more mature topic. It's a more mature theme. But I really didn't like the execution here. I've seen it done better before. Like, Welcome to the NHK, Narcissus. They handled it a lot better, I think, because they directly confronted it. This was like kind of a tease. It was like, yes, we could go into this, but we're not. Yes, we could go into this, but like, and approach this because of the situation in hand, but that's not the point. So I felt it was forced in. But I mean, it's a drama, that's kind of what they do, but I didn't really care for it.
Of course, that is a perspective on the subject, but if anything, I think I'd take Matt's justification as a good reason as to why it is there.
Yeah,
and I like relative similarity. The relative similarity between between the two stories definitely, I think, is justification for for involving one in the other, for sure.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was going to touch on, is I feel like if they had not grounded it in the story in the same way, where they hadn't built that up because that book had been given to Kaori because, you know, Watari brought it by when he was dumping all sorts of books on her bed, and then she saw that Kosei had read the book and decided to read it too. So there was enough sort of background added into that, and you can see the thematic similarities where I felt like they did a good job incorporating it in. But definitely, I would agree with Kevin. If they hadn't done that, it would have felt very forced from my standpoint. So I can definitely see where you're coming from in terms of that.
Well, we're Westerners, even if so, we don't know anything about that book. So I to me, in my point of view, it really did feel forced and unnecessary.
But if you think about it, like, put yourself in Corey's shoes, that thought would
It
definitely go across your
works
mind at
in
some
the
point. You
context.
got
I
a
mean,
month to
it
live.
works if you're in that viewpoint. It does, but not everyone is.
Well, and like I said, well, and the thing to keep in mind is, as much as we are Westerners watching the show and loving it, it is intended for people that live
Yeah,
in
of
Japan
course, but
and understand Japanese culture and are probably familiar. There's a more likely that they're familiar with this book.
yeah, of course, but if they don't, it's still forced in. If you don't know the story, then it's alienating.
Yes, agreed.
I guess, but
I'll
you can
take
say
that
the same
much.
thing about all sorts of other references that take place even in, you know, other TV series,
Well, that's because
not
well, most
necessarily related to this medium. So I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I feel like it's that we see this a lot in other things. And just because something references something that someone might not know, it doesn't automatically make it feel forced in. Because I feel like the internal justification for that within the story of Your Lie in April is very strong. So that reinforces why it has a place in the storyline.
Yeah, and again, like, I didn't know anything about the book, and it wasn't until the last 10 minutes in this podcast that I felt like it was actually justifiable.
Yeah, well, after I saw, because in the translation, on the subs, they left what she said in quotes, so I knew she was quoting something, so I did look it up, and I was like, oh my gosh, this fits perfectly. And I think that as much as we talk about references, if they were to put a reference to some literary or media work in Your Lie in April, I think that that book is perhaps the best one they could have possibly used. So it makes sense to me.
Yeah, but literary references in a medium like this doesn't work. I mean, if you're talking about references, almost all meta shows reference within the medium because that's their target audience. I guess, whatever. And I'm not very comfortable with saying that that's a very good thematic choice because it's been done
well,
better.
That is a
it
book
has
that
been done
many,
better.
It would be considered sort of a young adult book, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so now that we're done with this, what do you think are the best moments of the show for you? I mean, I guess I'll start off with after Kosei played that piece with the flashback resolving with his mom, I thought that was personally my favorite part because I felt really connected to the issues that Kosei was having more so than anything else, and that was my main draw to the story. I mean the other scenes are pretty great, but they're not amazing to me, so what are your guys' thoughts?
For me, and I want to leave like the final episode out of it, if possible, just because that was great. But we've discussed it a bunch. At least for me, I would say my favorite scene, and it's tough, but I'm kind of torn between two scenes, because the scene that had the most impact for me, I think, was at the end of episode. I think it was 20. It was I'm pretty sure it was 20. It was after Kosei, he finally decides to go see her in the hospital with Hari, and then she's having that seizure, and he like walks out, and then the cat gets hit by the car, and he carries it to the hospital, and they can't save the cat, and he's got the blood on his hands, and he basically just kind of like breaks down crying in front of that fountain as he's walking home. And it was probably the most like dark scene in the entire show, but after like he has like at the very end he like starts crying and then it cuts off, goes to the ending theme. I was like, oh my gosh, it was a very strong moment for me. So I would say it's my favorite in the sense of like masochist, you know, like, oh god, this is terrible, but it hurts so good kind of thing.
Yes.
Along the same lines of masochism, I guess the first episode and the second episode was like, oh yeah, here we got this happy thing, I can kind of see what's going on, they're probably going to get together in the end. And then at the end of episode 3, when they're on the bus, it's Corey and who's the other girl?
Tsubaki.
Tsubaki are on the bus, and she's like, oh, this is my stop, I'm getting off. And then the next stop, or Corey says she's going to be getting off at another stop, her stop's on a further destination. And she gets off at the next stop, which is the hospital. And that's just when it hits you. That's when you know the entire series is a tragedy. And it was confirmed at that point. Like, no one really said it was a tragedy to me at all. So I was just going in blind. My entire perspective on the show radically changed at that moment. And it was,
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It followed through with throughout the entire rest of the show.
And then it was Madoka episode 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, in terms of my favorite moments, yeah, like we were saying, you know, I could go through that entire sequence where they were going through the letter as, you know, one of my favorite moments. But in terms of the other episodes, I found the scene on the rooftop between... There's two actual scenes on the rooftop. There's one, I believe, in episode 18 and one in episode 21. And I feel like in those scenes, you see a lot of relationship development between Kosei and between Kaori. And in episode 18, you see from her perspective, this is the first time that we've actually seen something from her perspective where she's talking about after Kosei's told her that he wants to play again with her. You see from her perspective where she's saying, I thought my dream had already come true, but I'm greedy and I may play with you again one day. And that was a scene where you're saying, hey, okay, well, you're starting to understand her motivations a little bit, especially now that we know the lie. We understand what that dream was, where she wanted to play with him, and that even though that had already come true, she was still fighting to try and play again with him. And that links in nicely with the scene in episode 21 where she's saying, you really get another window into her mind where you see that she likes him back and that she's saying, you know, I'm basically staying alive because I'm trying to cling to the time that we have together. And I felt like that was, you know, just a really beautiful moment, especially the way that it was framed on the rooftop. And you see, as we were talking about before with the motive of color, you see that everything is kind of very muted, but then the color comes back into that scene. And it sets it up nicely for that last episode. So those were two of the scenes that really stuck out to me.
Yeah, that episode on the roof, it ends with her crying in his arms, asking, she wants to know more about him. She's like, what's your favorite insect? You like this kind of milk, don't you? And she's just trying to get everything she can out of him before the operation. She knows that might be the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Feels.
Ugh.
Did everybody go?
It's so strong. Mm-hmm. No, there's you and Michael, I think.
I had my scene.
Yeah, right.
Just me.
Yeah.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm a masochist too. That whole little date, I really liked it. And you know from the beginning when she's like, well, I'm not actually coming back to school. Yeah, just the exquisite pain and joy of that, like those moments. Like, I like that stuff. Like, I'm a bad person, but like,
there's not enough of it.
Like, that's what I enjoy. Yeah, I mean, if I can't count the ending, that would be the scene or the series of scenes that stick with me the most.
Yeah, anime, it really focuses on a lot of happy things and like poi and whatnot, and just it's good to get a tragedy in there once in a while, just to make you remember that there are sad stories out there. There's stuff that's really relatable to real life sometimes, and
yeah,
it's good to remind your heart that.
Yeah, like, I definitely think one of the things I liked about it, though, was even though it ended up being a tragedy in the end, it didn't end off on a depressing note where you have, it sets it up nicely for the future, where I like how they handled the relationship between Kosei and Tsubaki, where there's no sort of resolution there. He knows now, because Kaori's told him, that she likes him, but he's clearly not ready to acknowledge those feelings yet or anything like that. You know, he gets a smile where he, you know, he recognizes the feelings, but, you know, there's a glimmer of hope, but it doesn't move in that direction, which is really good, I think, because it doesn't trivialize the death of Kaori, and it allows the show to end off on kind of a hopeful note where he's going to remember her. He knows that that she loved him, that Kaori loved him. So I feel like it hit all the right notes in terms of being a tragedy, because it managed to balance nicely the good parts, the emotionally happy parts, and then the sad parts too. So it made it a really powerful experience.
Yeah, he's really reconciled with his feelings for his mother. So, like, you know how he's playing the piano every single time, he remembers his mom and he gets depressed and he starts playing underwater and whatnot. I think if that's his style of play, he needs something to replace that, right? So everything in the future when he's playing the piano, all those bad thoughts about his mom are probably going to be replaced by the thoughts of love and of Kaori and his memories for Kaori. That's going to be his inspiration when he plays. And rather than bringing him into a depressing state underwater, he'll be set into the sky and just play with all his heart's content.
Yeah, and that was really...
end, he's improved so much, yeah.
Yeah, like, sorry. There's a really powerful scene. No worries. There's a really powerful scene when he's just starting off and playing the ballet at the end of, or at the beginning of episode 22. And, you know, he's sitting there, and it really summarizes nicely the character development he's received over the course of the series, because he sees all the people who have been with him throughout his journey, and he realizes that, you know, he's not alone. But in the end, you see a cut to him as a scared child, and he's like, oh, I'm all alone. And then Kaori comes, and you see her come in and gives him a hug and says, but you have me. And that really showed well that he has all these other people. He now has the memory of Kaori, who's picked him up, and now he's going to start playing. So it really brought all of that together in a nice bit of emotional resolution.
Yeah, he'll remember her love through music.
Mm-hmm.
He's nothing but improved from meeting her, even though it was a short time. Like, he was a wreck at the beginning of the series, you know?
Yeah, now she fixed his future. Life.
Yeah.
But I think what was really powerful also about the lie is he benefited from her being in his life, he also brought a lot of joy into her life too, where she was sad, she was depressed, and she was pining over this boy who she wanted to buy sandwiches to try and get to know, and she finally does get to know him, and you see when in the funeral scene when her dad is saying, you know, thank you for making Kaur's life so much fuller. That's really powerful because it shows that the relationship goes two ways and really develops her character there, because you see that how important he was to her, and that it wasn't just he was the only one who benefited from that. So I really like that direction that they took there.
Absolutely.
I'm going to seg into our final thoughts.
Well, I think everyone, I can speak for everyone by saying that we all pretty much loved this show. It does so much right. And it's a really good one. Agreed?
Yeah, yes. It's a fun ride, and the ending just makes it all the better. Mm-hmm. It really stands out.
Yeah. Anyone else want to wrap it up? Any recommendations?
Well, sure. I know in the Anate review, what I recommended was Anna Hannah, just because if you're looking for something that's kind of a love story in the similar sort of way, and you're looking for those feels, you know, you love crying and stuff like that, like all of us clearly do, I guess, Anna Hannah, you know, you're going to get that emotional feedback. And I know I speak for myself and I speak for Kevin when we say that White Album 2 is another fantastic take on the music, on a music series. And I'm sure that I'll let him discuss that a little bit.
Yeah. When we were actually working on the review, I was actually trying to pitch putting in Kids on the Slope into the review card, but that didn't really go. But really, I think Kids on the Slope is kind of the perfect show to watch with Your Lie in April. I did that while I was waiting for the last episode, and it was amazing. Because they're both great music-related drama romance type of stories, and they're both just satisfying in the way they execute music in relationships, and I really liked it. And I think if you like Your Why, you'll like that one too.
So, accumulatively, that's Anohana, White Album 2, and Kids on the Slope.
I also, like, I think... we mentioned that about the Suicide one. If you're interested in going more into that, Narkisu is a visual novel that just dives deep into that, and anything seems hollow in comparison to how that executed its story of terminal illness. So,
Mm-hmm. And I know that at least in regards to Kids on the Slope, I didn't find Kids on the Slope to be as strong in comparison, just because it didn't resonate me as much with in terms of the art style and just the overall tone of the show. But definitely, I agree that if you're looking for where to go next in terms of looking for another musical anime, that's a good place to be looking. And I guess I'll elaborate a little bit on White Album 2. It has that same sort of relationship development in the same sort of way, and you know, it's a very different sort of tone, but it's also a very quality series that, you know, a lot of us on Anate really feel is very underrated and that more people should be watching. So definitely go and take a look at that.
Yeah, White Album 2 is just amazing. And like, I personally like White Album 2 more than Your Lie, but yeah.
Those three are all in my top five.
and I think that's a testament for how well music lends itself to human emotions. I mean, this is just me plugging for music again. But these great romantic stories, you can just, because music is human emotions, you know, at its core, that's what it is. And so when you put that kind of raw media form together with an actual story, that's real synergy. And Your Lie in April, the reason that I like it so much is because it does that so well.
White Album 2 does it better.
Well, you know, White Album 2 is just kidding. Very different in terms of the tone of the series, and I know that just, you know, without getting into spoilers and stuff like that, you know, Your Lie in April resonated with me a lot more, probably because of the wish fulfillment, where this is exactly the type of story that I look for and that I absolutely love. While White Album 2 is very good, but it didn't end in a way that I felt emotionally satisfied. Now, if you go and watch it, you'll find out what I mean, but it just didn't do it in the same sort of way for me, where I think it's a wonderful show, but it doesn't have that same sort of emotional, resonance with me, where I'm gonna remember this as like the show that I loved so much for from October to March, and that I just can't get enough of. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really a part of our lives for the better part of an entire year, I guess. We all just look forward to it every week. It's just one of those shows, right?
Yeah, both White Album 2 and Shigatsu were really good at kind of playing you like a drum. I mean, they raise you to heights, and then they knock you down. Kind of, Shigatsu's got a different feel to it, definitely, at the end. And, you know, if all the recommendations here have been for really sad kind of shows, so I'm going to recommend Kimi ni Todoke.
I'll back that.
Not everybody kills themselves. Where if you like the sweetness of what you experience in Shigatsu, and I'm going to give a spoiler, nobody dies at the end of this one.
No one comes close to that. For that
In Kimi ni Todoke, you don't even get that feeling. But it's got a hint of like, kind of like the like if Watamote went good, you know, like of somebody with genuine social problems overcoming stuff. It's a very much feel good story. It's kind of drawn out, but the romance is there. You get like the kind of giddy laughs, but it won't bring you to your knees and give you that good masochistic hurt that Lion April probably gave everybody.
No, Kimi ni Todoke.
Most definitely.
Kimi ni Todoke is really a show about friendship and just exploring that to its fullest.
Yeah. Shigatsu is more like, you know, it's about classical music, but I feel like it's more like the blues. It hurts so good, it makes you smile, you know? Kimi ni Todoke is like a candy bar. You know, it's not even in the same genre. So.
Yeah. Well, before we go, I just got to get in my bit, you know, Hikaru Nara. The best opening I have ever seen in my life. Not only because Goose House and Kay are in it, but just the way it sets up the tone for the first core of the show. And you know, I just had to say something about that before we left. So
I think we're all in agreement on that.
Well, yeah, best that was is stretching a fantastic it, but opening. It was really good.
The song is very good. Well, I guess everybody can see us all battle it out an OP of the day. I think we're all on
that one. That one won in February, didn't it? So.
It did.
Yeah,
we'll be seeing that at some point.
April 1, my Supercell won January.
March will be coming soon.
Yep. I'm working on it. So, you know, two openings for your Lion April are going to be in it along with Sororio Days from Gurren Lagann. So make sure that if you're listening to this, come vote. It's probably going to be up at around the same time. So, you know, have your voice heard, vote for your Lion April, do the right thing, and I'll leave it at that.
I even love how your roundup subtly steer things your way, man.
Subtly? What are you talking about? Heard.
We still got subtly one more week to finish up. Who knows, maybe Haru Yamada's gonna make it in there and beat your ass. Anyways.
Yeah.
So, closing remarks. Where can I find you people?
You can find me on a site that is on Kinja at a place, because I always give bad exits, and you're never going to stop that.
Oh, a site that's a place. Okay. Matt?
Alright. I'm Proton Storm. You can reach me on Kinja just like everyone else, and my Skype is also Proton Storm, so feel free to hit me up.
Yeah, I'm Matt W. On Anate, also going by MDubs occasionally. You can find me writing about, you know, I do a lot of stuff on light novels and manga, that sort of thing. So you can find me there. I talk a lot about Your Lion April. Check us out, I guess. But make sure you check out the site, most of all. Check out all our content. We've got so much good stuff there. Please, please, please come visit us.
I'm Stanlick. I write for Anite as well. I make lots of lists. I've been called out for that one. And you can find me on there. You can my Twitter is at AniCalendar, AniCalendar. That's a shameless plug if you've ever seen one.
I was just about to say, speaking of shameless plugs.
And I'm gonna clear this up for perpetuity. I am John UIUC. People just call me John. UIUC is University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Like, I've had that name for about 15 years on the internet. So it's just John. I've heard people try to say John Uwick, or something like that. And I
guess that's one of like the seven mysteries of Anthony. How do you say John's username?
Yeah, I always add in like an extra U or something like that when I'm typing it up for the roundup, so I always have to correct it afterwards. So.
No, you see the C is silent. It's just John U.
Yeah, it's like a French pronunciation. It's very different. But yeah, I'm mostly a commenter. I don't really do a lot of features. I will do OP of the day every 2 weeks, and it'll usually be Monogatari or something very old. Chances are if you write anything, I will comment and reply to you. It's kind of that's my MO.
So that's it.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching the show if you've watched it. You know, I'm really glad that a lot of people have responded enthusiastically. When I originally made that post saying that everyone should be watching Your Lie in April, I made it because I didn't think anyone was going to be watching it, so I'm glad that I've been proven wrong. And, just please keep visiting Anite if you're looking for anime content. I know we have fantastic content with visual novels and anime and such, so please continue to check us out.
Yeah, you don't need to worry about that. It's like, what is it? 10th on my anime list right now. It's gonna get lots of recognition if it hasn't already. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye. Watch White Album 2. Watch it. Watch White Album 2. Watch it.